Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
And the other may old acquaintance be forgot. La 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 la. La 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 la. Happy New Year, everyone, and with that I say f**k you, crackled f**k you, Hulu f**k you, Crunchyroll f**k you, Aniplex, and f**k you, Japan. Welcome, my Toonami generation, to episode 83 of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your always joyful primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And why am I starting the brand new year in such the joyful mood that I feel the need to cuss people out? Well, that's because of what I'm reviewing today. For those who stuck around through the last episode, which again, Yogi Bear's First Christmas, I made mention that it was going to get real, as my plan was to review Gurren Lagann. And as those loyal listeners know, I like to review the English version, since again, I am English, as what I'm watching, but most people probably would watch. Again, sometimes I'll watch subtitled stuff and I'll review, and I'll talk about the Japanese actors if you know, both sides are good, but for the most part, I try to focus on the English side. Well, when I planned on reviewing Gurren Lagann, they had the English version up on the internet, on all the websites, on Hulu, on Crackled, on all these web streaming services. Literally, as I took my week off and I was preparing to, you know, marathon the series and watch it, I go online and what do I find? I find that Crackled no longer has Gurren Lagann, since it only shows English dubs of shows. The only version on Crunchyroll and Hulu is the subtitle version. Aniplex only has the subtitled version. Why? I don't know. Are they planning on repackaging the DVD in a recent time? Or are they planning to put it on Toonami? Why are they now decided to take the English dub off these places is beyond insane, and as because of that, I had to eventually make an executive decision. And trust me, I did. I watched a couple episodes in the Japanese sub. And, well, beyond the fact that I saw the flaws that I should have seen when I first saw it, and kind of was getting angry, but I was going to power through, I did feel the fact that, like, you know what, I'm going to be basically reviewing this off the Japanese subtitle. I can't really do that. I have to watch the English, because I do want to talk about Kyle Hebert. I do want to talk about the other English voice actors, who, my feeling right now is that they've done a wonderful job in a series that, again, I don't like. Because of that, I made an executive decision. I'm going to have to hold off on reviewing during login. I don't want to, but I'm going to have to until I can get my hands on a copy of the English version, or it comes back on streaming, or whatever. And sometimes, guys, that's what's going to happen. Trust me when I say, I'd rather not. You know, this is what the hard part about, you know, also with Code Geass, which is another show like Gurren Lagann, that I kind of have the same feelings with that I want to review. Sort of, you know, have those great discussions I think I'll be able to have in reviewing those shows. But as such, I had to make an executive decision. Of course, I was also planning, you know, future episodes, and to give a heads up, because I'm excited for this. You know, next Tom Prerogative is going to be Romeo x Juliet, which I actually confirmed today is still has an English dub on Hulu, and Freakazoid the week after. But what are we reviewing this week? Well, I actually decided, hey, why don't I review a movie I just recently saw over December, because Toonami showed it as part of their December movie month, and it was a movie I had not seen. Now, I actually have the Full Metal Alchemist movie, so I've seen that. I hadn't seen Summer Wars, but I wasn't able to find that. I'm trying to remember what the first movie was, and I'm completely blanking on it, and I apologize. It was a big movie. But actually the movie I'm playing is the last movie they showed, which was Trigun Badlands Rumble. So, yes, in a very long-winded way that took me 5 minutes to explain, today's review is going to be on Trigun Badlands Rumble, the movie, which came out in 2010 and was a great movie entry that helped us, you know, fall back in love with the great Trigun series. And again, we'll get into all of that when we get to the review. I can say it's going to be a fun day. It really is. Actually, before I do get into the review proper, to kind of, some people might say stall for time, I actually do want to kind of jump into something. You know, the new winter season is out, and I actually have given a look to a couple of animes that have come out that I kind of, you know, want to mention. First off, I know, of course, you're going to talk about Manami K. I actually haven't seen it yet. I don't think I really need to talk about it, actually. You know what? If you like fan service shows like that, you're going to like it. If you don't, you don't. It's going to be more of the same. The spring that first season came out, it also came out with Mahoura the Samurai Girls and some other shows, which I actually thought were much better than it. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't good. It was your standard fan action. A fan service sort of action show. It is what it is. You either like it or you don't. But several other shows that I've gotten a chance to check out. First off, Sekidome. Yeah, I have to look it up. I'll actually go to another one, which I actually just watched the other day, which was Buddy Complex. I'll start with that one. By God, I just watched one episode, and it's like, if you are a fan of, you know, the 90s Gundam, if you are a fan of 90s Sunrise and what they did with Gundam, and of, again, the same creators of Outlaw Star and Escaflowne, if you are a fan of those, you know, you are going to love this show because it's the same people involved. And it's, my God, it's, the main character looks like Hiro Yui, except he has a personality, which won't please some people. What seems to be the female love interest in this, again, right off the bat, the big weakness of the plot is going to be, it's a time plot. So just a bit of warning there. But looks like Verlina is like, oh my God, these classic great artists are back and everything. If you are a fan of Gundam Wing, Outlaw Star, Escaflowne, all those shows like I am, you're going to love this mecha anime. It's Gundam. The mechs are very Gundam-like. It's like, okay, this is Gundam. They just couldn't call it the next Gundam series for whatever reason. The series I wanted to talk about, which I like to call the South Park of anime, is the second season of Setokai Yakudomo. If you have not seen this series, you do not know what you are missing. My God, is this series... It's killer. It will kill you, because you will be laughing so hard that you cannot breathe. It is that hilarious. This is one of those series that came out initially in 2010, was part of that broadcast of series that made 2010 such a great year. It was just so, by God, funny. It's just brutal, you know, uncompromising, unforgiving. We are not apologizing for anything. Comedy, which I find funny. There's a new series called Witchcraft Works, which I've seen two episodes. You know what? It's a very interesting show. It's one of those things that being that I've sort of learned over the recent years of witch culture, I want to pass it to some of my friends who are witches, because I'm like, I don't know whether to be offended or not at this series, because they're doing cute Japanese things and everything. It's ending. Right off the bat, we may have the ending of the year. Just in the just, oh my God, factor of that ending. And when I mean ending, I mean the ending song, ending animation for the ending song. The song's okay, it's the chibi-ness. A lot of people are like, I want to be offended, but it's so cute. It's one of those. Another show that I've seen that I thought was very, very good. I'm trying to look. It's right here. No, it's further down. I'm sorry. Nobugun. Which I saw one episode and it looked very interesting. And I definitely look forward to checking out more of it. So those are some of the ones. I'm trying to... I went and saw the Super Sonico. The animation based off sort of the internet idol. It was okay. I'll definitely be checking out more. I don't know if it's the best thing. Some things I hope to be looking forward to in the coming days. Nobi Gona the Fool. Strange Plus. Trying to think. There's one more show I know I watched that is interesting. I do know what it is. And I'm on Crunchyroll because a lot of it is on Crunchyroll. Oh, here it is. Nisi Koi. The basic premise of the show is sort of a romantic comedy about these two children from rival gangs. It's sort of Romeo and Juliet that have to pretend to be boyfriend and girlfriend, and, you know, the boy really is in love with this one girl at school. He's also in love with made a promise with a girl back in his childhood that, you know, they'd meet one day and he'd keep this lock that she gave him and, you know, they get married in the future. And it's one of those stories that's been done before. But again, I think the characters are really done. The animation is really well done. And I'm really going to look forward to seeing it. I mean, you have sort of a lot of, like, recently My Sister's Unusual, which is sort of that new quasi sort of light romantic comedies that have come out since 2010 that have been inspired by My Sister Can't Be This Cute, obviously, among other things. Just really looking forward. I also am looking forward to checking out Wizard Baristas. There's one more mecha anime I think I'm missing, but I can't remember. I mean, I know there's a mecha anime coming out in April. And now I'm just on it. But there are a lot of good shows out there. The winter season is upon us. Just go out and check one episode out and see what you like. It is really what I suggest. Because it is something to wear. And there's some good shows out there this season. So, with that being said, let's get into our review proper, shall we? Let's get into Trigun by Badlands Rumble. Look at that Batman Rumble. Rumble, young man, Rumble. So, our story starts 20 years, technically kind of before the series. The actual Trigun series starts. Gaspier was one of the best robbers in the world, and him and his gang have just robbed this bank, except his gang decides to double cross him, only for him to be saved by the legendary human typhoon Vasta Stampede. So we then jump 20 years later back to the current timeline of the Trigun series, as this story somewhat takes place during the series is the best I can say, because it never says it doesn't take place before, but it's not towards the end. It seems like it's like in the middle of when the Trigun series happened. And you know, the Gasbax gang have made a life for themselves, with one bringing up a town and becoming mayor, and but Gasbax has escaped and promises to get his revenge on all of them and making the greatest robbery of all time. Well, to protect himself, the mayor, his former right-hand man, decided to hire hundreds of bounty hunters to protect him. And the only thing stopping all the bloodshed from happening between Gasback and the bounty hunters is one humanoid typhoon, Vash the Stampede. This is Trigun, Badlands Rumble. With music, and let's talk about the overall score for Trigun Badlands Rumble. Again, going back to what the series did well with its soundtrack, you have a process of, you know, the score, you know, really embracing sort of those, the musical notes and taking on the musical theme of sort of the West, the Wild West. And by the way, just to put it in principle, the song I just played there, you know, a lot of people know that as the opening of the original Trigun, which was not used as part of the movie. The movie actually did not have an opening music number of any piece, or anything that I could really use to sort of represent it, or at least I felt. So I kind of, you know, went to the old Trigun theme there. So sorry if there was any confusion, that is a part of the movie. It isn't, but it does give you an idea of sort of the musical styles and the musical themes used as part of the score, which is really well done. It is more of that traditional Japanese movie where it has a lot of quiet scenes, and it's more, the music is really more of the sounds of the land and the sounds of the scene and it driving it. The music is really used a lot more in the action scenes and the sort of comedy scenes. But in some serious scenes as well, but for the part there is a lot of, you know, there's no music. It's the background sound that is really the soundtrack for the movie, which again, very unique and does sort of make it different from the actual series. Though the series had its points in that too. But again, those Western themes, a lot of the guitar, the classic rock, the hard rock. Not a lot of brass, though sort of deeper jazz influences there. And when I say deeper jazz, I mean sort of, I'm trying to think of the word, it's not a soprano, but sort of that deeper trumpet. I knew, it starts with a T, and I can't remember, and I apologize, but, and I'm not talking, well, trombones are there, but it's not trombone. They're a trenor, a tenor, treble trumpet is what I'm thinking of. Or I think that's what I'm thinking of. I think it's the proper term for it, but that deeper trumpet, that sort of deeper jazz, that not bright jazz, but that sort of moody jazz, per se, that is, you know, somewhat part of, you know, Western music. And when I say Western music, I'm talking about the type of music you hear in a Wild West type of piece. Again, that classic rock, a lot of the use of the guitar, not a lot of hard percussion, a lot more soft percussion, a lot more use of sort of the snare drum as rather than the cymbals or the bass. You know, that type of feel that you'd have from a Western-themed score. I don't want to call it cliche again, because, again, cliche takes on a negative demotion about the music. So I'd say it's more of a classical type of sort of Wild West score. But it does hit all those notes that you'd expect of a Wild West score. And the fact of the matter, it does the score very well, and the score achieves what it needs to. Again, being that it's more of that Japanese style, it's in certain places, and especially like the action scenes, the music does give that heightened sense and give it sort of that stylistic approach that it needs. It's that final piece in the action scenes that just make them good. And I think they chose the right music for each action scene, because it's always different. Like, this action scene has more of a sort of fast rock track. You know, the duels have more of a sort of moodier, softer track. And again, that works very well for the movie, and it works very well in the movie. So I thought that was done extremely well. With that, let's move on to the animation. The animation style of Trigun is just beautiful. Madhouse Animation did the animation here, and they were just wonderful. This is what I really see computers and animation being, and I wish Disney, I'd wish a lot of animation studios around the world would take a look at this and see this is what really computers can do. And what I mean that is that computers should be there for the finishing, because that's what really sets this animated movie apart from its television series predecessor. And really what makes it look so modern and everything. I mean, it has that classic Trigun style of, you know, author Yasuhiro Natto. Again, manga, the actual series really looked a lot like his original manga. Or various his character designs and as the such. And you do have that really beautiful hand-drawn style really prevalent here in the movie as well. But again, difference between 2010 and 1999 is the finishing. And I think that's something that's not talked about. Again, Madhouse doing a great job in recapturing that classic Trigun style. It goes back to sort of that same style you'd see in Cowboy Bebop and Outlaw Star and those classic 90s characters of anime. But again, just a lot more smoother. The animation is smoother. Everything is clean and crisp. And it's that finishing. And when I talk about finishing, I'm talking about the smoothness of sort of the pencil lines and the things like that, to where it looks nice and clean and crisp, where it can, you know, in the past, Trigun, it still had that feel of the, you could feel the pencil lines in the animation. Here you don't see that. It's more blended in. It doesn't feel as sketchy. And that's really the difference there. That's what a computer can do. That's the type of finish that the computer can put on the animation. That couldn't be done in the 90s. And I wish Disney would see that. That's really how they should use CG, at least at Walt Disney Animated Studios. Pixar can continue to do their CG stuff. And I know I'm transferring this into a rant about Disney. I promise you I'm not. I'm just using them as an example. There's a lot of Japanese studios who could learn this and go back to doing hand-drawn. Gainax, I think, is one of them. Of course, Gainax has his own style. But, yeah. I really, really wanted to talk about Gurren Lagann. I was really prepared to just lay into Gainax. And you do not know how much it hurts that I was not able to lay into Gainax. Though the plus side is I did get to rewatch this movie, which I very much enjoyed. So it's happy times all around. But yeah, the animation is just, again, that clean, crisp finish just really sets it apart from the series, but it is that classic animation of the actual Trigun series that is back, that's sort of what you feel the West in the animation. I think this is a great point to go into character design. The character designs are just great. Vash the Stampede is just a wonderful character design, so iconic of a character. The yellow hair, the sort of flat top aspect of it, the yellow glasses, the red coat. I have to admit that Trigun had a huge influence on me, and stories I created in the early 2000s, in my mind, I had a lot of characters that would have a red coat. There's a story I came up with called The Black Rose Brigade, and the main character, who was very influenced by Vash the Stampede, he had a red coat. The whole sense of the Red Rose Brigade. I'm getting ahead of myself. They all had these red coats like Vash the Stampede. So it's very influential. It's very iconic character design. They nail it here. It's clean, crisp. It's wonderful. Really works in this, sort of for what the character is. It works. And then the supporting characters all have great, Meryl's character design. It's just wonderful. Sort of short, small woman stature. Lends itself sort of comedy of this very domineering, in-charge woman. Millie. Again, being more tall, being the most sort of soft giant. The comedy aspect there that works in the character design is just wonderful. And, of course, it's played out perfectly on screen. The character animation here, the way the characters move and everything, is done extremely well. Especially the comedy bits and the action scenes are just done extremely well. Amelia is a great new character that I thought was done extremely well. That sort of strength and sort of independent spirit that you feel in the characters and yet being sexy and sassy. And of course the English character voice we'll get to really match that. We'll get to that when we get to acting. But again, you strong, sexy and sassy, but at the same time strong and independent and fierce. You really feel that in the character design and sort of just that great sort of cowboy look, really capped off with the cap and the sort of red curly hair and everything. Just wonderful. Gasback. Oh my god, I love this titanic being with the big shoulder pads and everything, and just, oh god, I love his character design. He's a great villain design. He looks like somebody you really don't want to meet in a dark alley. And that's something I love. I love when you get a real good character design that puts you in a place to where, yeah, you don't want to meet this villain just based off the look. He could be a teddy bear. You're not going to take the chance. You know, it's great to have these villains that are sort of, that lure you in and everything. But I think sometimes something that's missing in a lot of anime and a lot of animated shows these days is the villain that, you know what, you just know he's the bad guy. You know he's evil, you know he has something bad planned. Just off the, you know, look, and you're just waiting for that other shoe to drop. And like, to quote Steve Carino from Ring of Honor, I knew it! I knew that couldn't be trusted! And right now I made Maddie J very, very happy. yeah. But yeah, I just love the character designs. Wolfwood was just great as well. Classic Wolfwood. And again, those sort of themes that match to the person in the cloth, that sort of monk. Sort of pastor feel, which works very well for Wolf's character and what his character does. The action animation is just incredible and wonderful. Very stylized, yet the action is easy to follow. With a lot of great sort of action movement thrown in. It's not simple like, hey, I'm going to run to this point and shoot, and run to this point and shoot. You know, the dodge rolls and the, you know, the hiding behind the rocks and the shooting and the placement of the bullets and everything. The choreography was just wonderful. It all formed this great dance in all of these action scenes that were stylish, stick and approach. My favorite scene by far, though, being in the city attack when Gasback, you know, he finds himself in the alleyway and there's all those guys, and then all of a sudden the truck decides to come through the alley, changes his gun, shoots it. And it's that classic slow walk. Sort of like you think, oh my god, they're moved to slow motion and Gasback is slowly walking down the street. Yet behind him, quickly moving, are the people who are like, oh my god, we're gonna die! And here comes this flaming wreck following them. And an explosion. It's cheesy, but it's great cheesiness, and it works, and it's so wonderful to watch. But yeah, the action animation is just spot on, gorgeous, great. Even in simple scenes, like there's a scene early in the movie when they're on the transport, and Vash is trying to stop these two guys who basically, you know, they don't outright say it, but basically say, you know, they're trying to rape Amelia. Yeah, catches them in the blanket, and these little simple movements that he does get easy to follow, yet very stylized and very unique, and captures these guys, and it's a wonderful scene. With that, let's move on to backgrounds and special effects. And the backgrounds are gorgeous. Again, especially these days, these are backgrounds that are not seen, but again, it goes back to the sort of classic approach to the backgrounds that made the sort of late 90s animation, and late 90s anime for that matter, just so wonderful to look at. You know, whether it be Cowboy Bebop, Outlaw Star, Escaflowne, or Trigun. You know, just wonderful backgrounds, detailed. They give depth, they give a sense of a world that you are immersed in. And they're wonderful, whether it be in Mecha City, whether it be in the desert, endless desert, and everything, whether it be in a valley, in a forge. All these different backgrounds, all these different sort of scenes that were set for the characters to be immersed in and to tell their own story. And that's the thing, is that all these backgrounds, whether they be in Mecha City, told their own story, whether they be in sort of that valley at the end, it with its own story. Whether they be in the desert, it told, or on the hovercraft, the hover transport that Vash was on. Again, its own little setting, own little world that the characters were fully immersed in. The backgrounds of those places were just wonderful, and the special effects as well, just absolutely incredible. Great particle effects. The special effects team did an absolute incredible job. Whether it be, again, those particle effects of the desert, everything, but also things like, you know, we have bullets flying, a lot of dust, a lot of everything, yet it all felt real. It all felt I'm trying to think of the word here. It all felt like I could reach out and touch it. It didn't feel like a second thought. It felt like a part of the environment. It helped immerse you into believing that these environments are real and that these characters are actually in these environments, and allowed the action scenes to be as good as they are, and other scenes to be as good as they are. It's something as simple as, there's a point to where they're throwing knives at a picture of Gasback, this sort of gang of hoodlums, and you sort of see a little splinter fly off. That little particle effect right there, again, that's a sign of a great special effects team that doesn't really get the praise it deserves. So just an absolute wonderful job by the special effects team. Backgrounds are gorgeous. Overall, the animation is just wonderful to look at. It's something to where I'm sure I could watch it 5 times and not see everything that especially the special effects and background team did. I'm sure I could watch it 5 more times and always see something new as far as the animation. So the animation, just wonderful, and tells the story and matches the themes, as we'll get to with the story. It matches the themes all really well. So with that, though, it's break time. It's time to let you know about all the podcasts that do a much better job than I do, because I have that Jewish thing where I don't believe I do as good of a job as I think I do unless somebody tells me to do a good job. Yeah, I'm that insecure. Yes, I'm completely sort of begging for comments. Tell me you like me. But anyways, it's time to, for a quick commercial messages. We're going to play promos for a couple of other podcasts that I hope you'll check out. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and into story. After these messages,
we'll be right back. This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be. It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go, at least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
this just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air. Eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it. Of course, we're going to get into acting, which of course means let's go over our cast list. So, starting off, reprising his legendary role as Vash the Stampede is the Black Ranger himself, Johnny Young Bosch. Amelia Ann McFly, voiced by Colleen Klinkenbeard, fathered by Michael J. Fox. Sorry, couldn't resist. Okay, before we move on, I have to get this out of the way. McFly! McFly! Hello! Anybody in there? Good, you're awake. Now make like a tree and get out of here. That's my god-awful Back to the Future reference. I had to get out. Moving on! We have Meryl Streep as voiced by Lucy Christian. Millie Thompson, voiced by Trina Nishimura. Gasback Galleon Getaway, voiced by John Swayze, and we're gonna get to him. Oh, you can tell what I'm excited about a voice actor. And Nicholas D. Wolfwood, voiced by Brad Hawkins. Again, we're gonna get to antagonists. You can tell. This is a good cast. Let's start with Johnny Young Bosch. This is my favorite Johnny Young Bosch role. It really is. I think he needs to have more sort of upbeat character roles, because I think he plays upbeat comedic characters really well. I don't know. Don't get me wrong. He does sort of the moody characters like Ichigo from Bleach and Lelouch from Code Geass well. He's not the problem in the voice. But again, those characters just eat up scenery, and he's not a eater of scenery, or at least he's not good at it. Vash is what Johnny is good at. He is great at that comedic role. I think, again, this is a story straight from Johnny Young Bosch's mouth about something he did in Power Rangers, where I think he said he and Rocky would, or he and someone else would, like, stand under their tippy toes and scenes to make themselves look bigger. That sort of comedic aspect, which I think he did as a joke, sort of represents their character personality. I think perfectly exemplifies this character and why he works so well as this character. Again, that great comedic timing he has with Vash the Stampede along with the great positive energy that he implants into Vash that makes the characters work so well. It's also what allows for those more serious scenes to be so realistic and have such impact that Johnny Young Bosch gives them. His more sort of, I don't want to call him moody, but the more serious scenes, Johnny Young Bosch is able to put more impact into that because of more of the positivity that he's allowed to give with this character. Johnny Young Bosch does a great job with the character, but it's also a fact of, like, this is just perfect casting. It's more of the actor is made to play this character than it is just, he is such a great actor and it's all on the actor. It's both the character and the actor, them being made for each other, and it just working compatible, and it creates a great hero character that you just love and cheer for. You love all his kookiness, you love all his craziness. that little that perverted psychopathic disabled kid like laugh that he gives Bass, I just love. Colleen Klinkerbeard as Amelia is, wow, again, remember how I was talking about sexy and sassy, and at the same time strong, fierce, and independent? That basically describes Colleen's voice acting style. So again, it's a perfect character casting here, and she brings all those, that great sort of sexy, sassiness, yet that strong and independentness to the character voice. I love, again, Colleen does a great job acting, just a great job being serious when needs to be serious, and working the comedy bit so well, just a great job with the character. Then we have Meryl Streep, and you have Lucy Christian, again, a great Lucy Christian, praise be her name. This is an aspect I want to talk about, because again, this is an instance of a voice actress replacing another. You know, in the actual series, it was Dorothy Alice Fawn, the legendary voice actress. Lucy Christian, not only did she do a great job portraying the character, and I want to start off with that, because she did a great job portraying the character. Hit all the comedy beats of the character just right. Again, in this movie, Meryl and Millie more were comedy relief than they were a very serious aspect in the story. Again, kind of like Wolfwood. Wolfwood, almost to the extent of it being fan service, yet really not. But again, you know, bringing in recognizable characters to sort of fit the story. But not only did Lucy Christian play the character right and hit all the comedy beats and make it funny, also the fact that she sort of matched her voice with Dorothy's and hit sort of those same mannerisms that Dorothy did with the actual character in the series, that's something I noticed in watching it. So I thought that was an incredible job, not only to actually nail the character. Again, and that's not something I'm surprised that Lucy Christian was able to do, because Lucy Christian is a wonderful voice actress. But the fact that she not only nailed the character, hit all the mannerisms for the character that she needed to, but also to match him in a way that was very similar, yet different from Dorothy. You know, hitting those same aspects that Dorothy did. I wonder if maybe she got some notes from Dorothy. I wouldn't be surprised. But that aspect of, again, just hitting those aspects to make it seem like it is the same voice actress, yet at the same time having a different aspect for those who know voice actresses. I think somebody who watched the television series who really doesn't follow voice actresses maybe wouldn't think it was a different voice actress, unless they were told so, because it does seem that similar. So just great casting all the way around. And I can say the same exact thing for Trisha Nishimura, who, you know, replaced Leah Sargent from the television series. Again, same exact thing. Hit all the notes right as far as acting the character, but also did them in a way that sort of really fit Leah's sort of mannerisms of how she played Millie Thompson, at least to how I remember it. I actually have not watched Trigun in years. And probably in saying this, I should have gone back and watched it, but I was going just off memory. And I think that's more important here, because, yeah, I could go back and say, yeah, I can see the differences now, But at the same point in time, you're basically going off memory. And first, I think a lot of people probably watched this, not seeing the series in years. And I think for anybody doing that, they're like, wow, it really feels like they are the same character. So again, I thought those characters did a great job. That being said, I think Nicholas D. Wolfwood, voiced by Brad Hawkins, wasn't like that. Again, it was obviously a different voice. But again, as always with anime, it's not whether it did the same voice. Again, I'm talking about that with Lucy Christian and Trina Nishimura because, again, that is a very interesting thing that they did that I thought worked and was great. They didn't need to do that. And again, with Brad Hawkins, that's why I don't hold it against them. And he did a great job nailing all the mannerisms and all the things that made a Wolfwood this sort of man of the cloth that's on two sides of the law. Really a great character and really brought out the strengths of the character. Both the comedy bits and the serious bits did them really great job. Great acting all around for the protagonists. That leaves us with one character left. Gasback. Voiced by John Swayze. I love John Swayze. You remember John Swayze, right? You don't? Remember when we reviewed Kaleido Star New Stage? Yeah. I'm blanking on his name. I had it just a second ago. Oh, wow. And this joke went completely to hell. Oh, God. But yeah, you remember Trigun, right? Right? Climbers in. Oh, great. Yeah, we have to go through it. I hate when I have to do this. Sorry, folks. Ken! You remember Ken from Kaleido Star? I had this great joke set up, and then it went to hell. Where this podcast is heading right now. But yeah, John Swayze, who voiced Ken Robbins in Kaleido Star, if you hear that, now listen to this. My God, the differences. It's one of the reasons I was so excited to actually review this. Because again, when I found out John Swayze was voiced, like, that was John Swayze? Really? That was John? And honestly, it probably sounds closer to John's actual tone. Because I have met John Swayze. He is an absolutely incredible, wonderful man. He's one of the men who came up with the concept of Redneck Gamera, which I will always be thankful for him. Him and, I'm blanking the name. I'm not going to go over it now. But yeah. He just nailed this character, and he was in love with it. And just this deep voice, and, you know, you got a plan, man. You know, just having that great sort of classic deep Western character. Like, you gotta roll the dice. Hold on here. Because if I'm gonna do this, I have to get a drink first. You only can roll the dice once, Vass. Yes, and you gotta deal with what the dice cast you. You think saving me gave you leverage? Well, we'll see what the dice cast for you. So that deep classic sort of, that's nowhere like the character, but it's my attempt at the character, or at least probably what I would do with the character, but that deep classic Western, just absolute bad guy, you know, that, oh God, it's beautiful to listen to. It is just, John Swayze's portrayal of Gasback needs to be classified as an absolute work of art, because that is what it is. My God, I love Gasback, and it just pure villainous fun. This is why Hollywood needs to hire more anime voice actors. This is what they can do. Do you see what you're missing out on, Hollywood? Do you see what you're missing out? But John Swayze, wonderful job. Everything that made this character work. And it is this character that makes the movie work. Him and just the great connection, great sort of teamwork that they had, the sort of both Johnny Young Bosch, the way he portrayed his character, the way Johnny portrayed his character, and the way they melded was just wonderful. So, yeah. I love it. I love the character. I love his portrayal. Just spot on. The voice acting was just wonderful in this series. So, with that, let's move on to story. Let's start off by, again, talking about the main theme. And I kind of made a reference to it in my horrible attempt at doing Gasback. The role of the die of life. That, which is sort of a classic Western theme, which it really, when it comes down to when you break it down, is really talking about the choices we have in life. You know, we all have times where we have to make a choice in life. And what we have to do is, when we make that choice, we have to accept that choice for what it is. We have to accept the consequences along with the reward. And that's sort of what's talked about here. You know, again, Vash, you know, sort of taking the bad role of other people and trying to, you know, make other people's lives better. You know, and, you know, in the short run, seeming like it costs him to be designated as the humanoid typhoon and responsible for all this damage and having the $60 billion bounty on his head. But in the long run, you see how it helps characters. The really principal aspect they show this in, again, with Amelia, who the twist is that she's the daughter of Gasback, which, honestly, hell, I saw that coming from the beginning of the series. When I saw this in Tanami and they first showed her character, I'm like, that's Gasback's daughter, isn't it? Because, yeah, this goes back to character design, and that's a great thing, the way their character designs look alike in sort of that same color scheme in the clothing that they wear. Again, the hair probably was a dead giveaway. But, yeah, I guessed that early on. But, again, there's a difference between something, I guess, that I see coming that, you know, when they're really trying to, like, oh, we were really trying to be secret. Did we surprise you? No. And that's a sign of a bad series. As opposed to something like this, to where they're not really trying to trick you. They're giving you little clues here and there. And if you figure out, like I did, that's great. But it's like, we're just trying to tell a story. And because of that, the twist really works. Again, and that's a great thing to this overall plot. We're going to get to the overall plot in just a second. But yeah, that theme of Rolling the Dice, you see all these people, and again, they don't hit you over the head with it, which I like about it, but it's put in a subtle way that I very much enjoy, to where you have all these people making these little choices and having to deal with the consequences. You know, the gang that's on the run, you know, Kane, the mayor, you know, who was part of Gasback's gang, decides to double-cross him, thought he'd get away. Now Gasback is back, not only to get revenge on him, but to pull off the greatest robbery ever, and hurt him in the process. You know, that is the consequences of the choices he made, and, you know, he has to deal with them. But he, again, that's the thing about, you see, the people who sort of lose out at the end of the series. The people that made their choices and seemingly were on the run for them, with the exception of Gasback, mind you, didn't really fear too well. But again, the aspect of Vash trying to teach that to Amelia, that sort of teaching aspect that allowed for that subtle induction of the theme in there that I really much enjoyed. And really the great scene that really showcased this was, you know, after Vash is presumed dead and they're back in town and Amelia's thinking back why he died, why he, like, saved through his life, try to get in the way of her shooting Gasback, only to be shot himself, but looking around and seeing how the town was dealing without the power plant, realizing what Vash was saying was right. The reason Vash got in her way was not so much to save Gasback, but in the fact that it was too dangerous of a situation, and the fact that she could have destroyed the plant, and look at how people were suffering without the plant now. If she had heard it and they couldn't repair it, they'd all really be in trouble. It'd be the destruction of the town. And so, stopping her from making that choice that could have hurt millions. Again, sometimes we are given a choice to where that short-term choice hurts us in the short term, but long-term benefits the better of society. And again, those sort of those Western themes, and again, it's a classic sort of theme used in Westerns, the idea you have a choice, you have a die you cast, you got to live by that choice, and you got you don't allow your life to be defined by that choice, but you got to put in a term, man up, and be responsible for that choice. Classic Western theme, love it here. And then, of course, you have the plot, which really, when you look at the plot, this real movie actually feels like a long episode of Trigun, just split into three parts. It really feels like a three-parter of the Trigun series. Really, or should I say, it could also be like a three-episode OVA of Trigun. Very much like what Gundam Wing Endless Waltz was. Gundam Wing Endless Waltz was a, I want to say, four-episode OVA. It was four or three. I can't remember off the top of my head, and I really should, being as big of a Gundam Wing fan I am. But, again, that's what it felt like. It felt like it. That's the good part of it. There's a positive and a negative of this. The positive is, because it feels like it really is a part of the series, especially considering that, from what I can acquire timeline-wise, this kind of happens somewhere in the middle of the television series, seemingly. That's where this seemingly takes place. It gives this sort of very natural, familiar feel, and anybody who's actually watched the television series will instantly feel the connections and instantly be on to, you know, connect to certain things and really get into the movie. To somebody who's not ever watched Trigun and doesn't know about it, there's not actually a lot of things that a person can connect to. Because there's not a lot of sort of introduction into these characters. They just appear, they assume you know who these characters are, and there's not so much introduction. I mean, there's small little scenes here and there that sort of introduce you to the characters, but not that sort of introduction to really introduce to you who the character is. I mean, with Vash's case, they introduce you to him in sort of a goofy way, which I guess it could be the same said for how they did in the first episode, but again, they had a whole episode to play with that. Here, they only had 5 minutes at the most. Again, it's something that you already know these characters, and it really benefits more of the fans of the series who've seen the series rather than somebody who's coming in cold who's not seen the series. So the positive is, with this, that it's great for fans who've seen the series. They can get just jump into the movie real quick. But for somebody who hasn't, there's really not a great jumping on spot for them to jump in and understand these characters. Again, not that the story is that confusing for people, but that can be the difference between seeing this as just a simple Western story, which to an extent it is, and seeing it for something much more deeper and understanding the characters. Because there's a story there that's told within the characters, but because it also requires you to have that sort of present knowledge of the characters, again, that's the negative there. But as far as the plot is concerned, it does. It has that sort of classic Trigun plot feel. Vash trying to save everybody. And sort of teaching a lesson at the same time. Again, I go back to the whole point of, like, this movie I can see three distinct episodes. There's the first half hour, which really is the setup. There's that middle part, the whole action that goes on, the whole heist, and I would say, like, Vash being shot is the end of that episode. And then there's the final 20 minutes, which could be said. I mean, if I was breaking this up into, I would end at Vash. Though they would more than, I don't know. That's where I'd end it. I think that's where they ended. Like, I think the ending of the first episode would be after the bar fight and they go to sleep. From there, then to the end of that, Again, this is the movie is 1 hour and 30 minutes long, so it'd be about, not including TV breaks, mind you, it would somewhat fit, I guess, the movie television series concept. They'd probably have to cut some stuff here or there. I guess that's why it is a movie, because there's really not a lot you could really cut from it. But still, it just feels like a really long episode of Trigun. 3 episodes crammed into one. And again, like I said, the plot, it's classic Trigun plot. It's wonderful. All those Western themes and stylized and everything that made Trigun so good. And finally, you have the pace of the film, which I thought was just spot on. Again, a nice, steady pace. And I talk about this all the time, but I can't talk about it enough because I think it is an important part. You know, when I say something, when something under like 4 and that stuff, you know, I talk, you know, usually it has a bad pace. The stuff they usually praise and it's like 4.5 and up there on the rating scale has a really good pace. This has a really good pace. Just nice, steady pace. It has a sort of television pace to it. Again, going to that point of this feels like just a long episode of Trigun. But still, that pace works very well for the movie. It follows along at a nice click. It gives you clues, gives you points. It allows you to be intelligent in watching the movie. And that's something I think I want to talk about more this year when I review stuff is I like movies that allow you to be intelligent, that respect your intelligence. Like, okay, here are the story points you need to know. And here's the stuff that you can, we're just going to say you can probably figure out. And we're going to play with this. And we're going to do metaphors here and metaphor that. We're going to make sure you're smart. Because I think it is important for people to understand that your audience is not dumb or stupid, but they have to be, you know, guided. You have to guide your audience. That doesn't mean they're stupid or dumb. There's so many movies out there that just like act like their audience is dumb and they have to be told everything and all sorts of things that are just wrong. You are the director. What you are is you're the guide, and you need to provide that guide to the audience, or else they're not going to follow. And part of that is pace. Having a nice steady pace allows for a nice steady guide for the audience to follow. And you can sometimes quicken and slow the pace, but it has to be done in a very executed way that works for the film. So here, pace, really well done, nice steady pace. And when it did get quickened up a bit in the action scenes, extremely well done. So, at the end of the day, what do I think of this film? Well, I thought it was a great film. As somebody who enjoyed Trigun back in the day, it had that great Trigun feel, especially of the early episodes, mind you. That's why I say this is more, this feels like it would be placed more in the middle of the series, sort of late, more of the, like, I would say maybe between 10 and 15, or, like, yeah, it was 20, I'm sorry, 26 there, so I'd say, like, around episode maybe 10, I feel like that's where it'd be placed, maybe around episode, because again, Wolfwood's there, so maybe episode 15, somewhere in that area. But yeah, as somebody who loves Trigun, I love the movie. It just had that great Trigun feel. I think the one sort of big negative against it, though, is that it really doesn't have a great introduction piece that introduces you into what Trigun is. Because Trigun is a Western, but it's not. It's also sort of a space opera to an extent. And so, it doesn't really, to an extent, the movie can be viewed as a great jumping on point. Like, hey, I really love this movie. Let me go watch the series. But it's really not representative of the series. And for somebody jumping on cold, you know, the movie really isn't anything like the series in a way. It is, but it isn't. And that's a big negative because it can be confusing to somebody jumping on, you know, Cold Fish, who's never seen Trigun. And it's a big thing. It's not a horrible thing, because, again, it is so good that somebody can watch it and still want to watch the series. But at the same point in time, I don't think they would get the full extent of what the series is about by watching this movie. This is a movie made for people who are fans of Trigun. It has an expectation that you are a fan of the series and a fan of Trigun. So at the end of the day, I give Trigun Badlands Rumble a 4.5 out of 5. An excellent movie, and if you are a fan of Trigun, you will love this. If you kind of like westerns, I think you'll enjoy this. It definitely has some great rewatch value, and highly suggest watching it. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Great first episode of the new year, I think. Again, sometimes life gives you lemons and you have to make lemonade. Those bleeping bleeps. And yes, I'm censoring myself so I don't have to do work later. Peel back and forth wall there. Didn't want me to watch Gurlug, and that's fine. I'll watch Trigun. But yeah, fun. If you have any comments or anything that you feel I was right, I was wrong, anything you want to say about how you feel I'm doing of the show, trust me, I always want comments. I always want to know how much better I'm doing. There are several ways you can contact me. First, you can contact me by email, by emailing to absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also like us on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to www.facebook.com and searching for the Absolution Network. We are the one with the sort of white logo that has the A and the N in a circle. Or you can just go to the page and see that, you know, the podcasts are on there. That's also where we can find the podcast. You can also leave us a comment there. So like us and leave us a comment there. And you can leave a comment on the website itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, remember to check out all the other 132 Productions content. That, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. The Shaft Plus podcast with Gene and Chris that you can find at www.shaftplus.com. The Tokyo SOS podcast, which as of this recording will soon have, because I'm editing it now, the massive Godzilla Final Wars review featuring my good friends Kyle Yount and Luke from the Earth Destruction Directive. And of course, you can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And of course, my comic book crazy podcasting site, which is going through a couple things. I'm going to have some new stuff out soon. It's going through some difficulties, but you can find all past episodes. And we have some great old episodes like comic book crazy movie episodes, episode 13 of Hexcast, among others. So, comic book crazy, Hexcast. You can find those at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, remember to check out all our friends on the sidebar of the site that do such wonderful stuff. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's views from the Long Box and from Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawl Space, Steven Slyker's Major Spoilers Podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's Two Freaks Podcasting Network. And that is it for this episode of Tom Prerogative. Next week, my Toonami generation, we dive into a series that I absolutely love as a fan of Shakespeare. Because it is pretty much my favorite Shakespeare play. Of course, talking about Romeo and Juliet, and I'm talking about the great anime of the late 2000s, Romeo vs. Juliet. So until next time, my Toonami generation. Find cover. It's gonna get too dangerous. Stay golden.
about does her. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom, signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.